Welcome to What Won't You Say, a woman-centered podcast. I'm your host, Sonia Mastic. Stick around for the season to be inspired by amazing women who bravely delve into the stories of their lives, giving hope and inspiration to others. Together, we will explore such a wide array of topics that you will be asking yourself, what won't you say? Okay, welcome back to What Won't You Say, but this is the mini episode of Believing in Biscuits. And I'm here with Sarah Zimmerman. Hello, hello.
Hello, how are you?
Great. So how exciting. We're here to do the recap of episode one, season three.
Yes, final season has finally launched.
Again, just to say, we are reviewing the episodes. If you're listening and you haven't watched it, stop listening and come back and listen when you're done, because this is all spoiler alerts. We're going to say everything that's going on. Yeah.
Absolutely.
So opening. Yeah.
I wanted to say that a lot of other people are probably like pontificating about what's going to happen with a season or and that's really stupid, but we're right. And they're going to end up making us writers on the movie eventually. So
I mean, without question. Without question.
All right.
So it opens up and the opening scene is the close-in shot of Ted's face. He looks quite, sullen and sad, and you don't know what's going on, but it turns out he's at the airport with his son and he's sending him back to Kansas.
Because Henry has spent 6 weeks with him on the break during, the season break. Yes, of course, Henry and the ex-wife live in Kansas and Ted lives in London.
So, I find it interesting that some of the things that happened while Henry was there, Ted ends up using it as coaching, teaching to help people deal with the predictions of, that their team is going to be last place, as Nate often colorfully says, well, there's not a 21st place. So right. They'll come in 20th or last place. Mm-hmm. I like how they weave through the episode his past 6 weeks with Henry.
Mm-hmm. It also shows a lot his, so the angst that we're seeing with him right off the bat is this kind of sense of loss and grief. And like, is this the right choice? Me living across the world from my kid, you see it, we haven't really seen him as a parent so much. We've seen him over FaceTime a little bit here and there, that kind of thing. But to see him with his kid, it's been, I think we're seeing the very difficult decisions that he continues to make,
I think also, and they touch upon it many times in this episode, but they have in the past too, where it's implied in season two, really, that the reason why his wife left them is that he doesn't fight for anything in the traditional sense. And through this episode, because Rebecca's really hung up on her personal vendetta with Rupert, her ex-husband, and because she keeps, having all these slips saying, he thinks that we're trash. And Ted keeps saying us.
He's going to beat us. He thinks he's going to beat us. Personally is not going to be out on the field. His team that he just purchased just fight you, basically.
Yeah, but I love it when she's like, he's playing, that they think that Rupert's going to win this year. He's like, oh my God, he suited up and he's playing. Like, and she's like, right. Well, no, his team. Okay. I think that is sort of like, in my opinion, that does sort of lend it to the fact that he's just like this sort of whipped puppy, where he is sullen. He's letting his kid go back. He's not really fighting for a different thing. And I think that's a little bit of what they're sort of putting into that, because again, they bring it back over and over through the entire episode with Rebecca, how she wants him to, she says point blank, I want you to fight for this team. I want you to fight the win. I want the Ted Lasso that said, we're going to kick their ass last season to be here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's interesting. I was seeing a lot of the ways that his unprocessed self kind of turns to toxic positivity in the face of anything negative, in the face of anything challenging. And I can imagine that being married to that would be very difficult, And so I think that's some of it. And being, and because he never really, in fact, there was a moment where he, somebody literally said, let's see, we are the underdogs, and he deflects and goes, how come you never hear about overdogs? Like, he always has a positive, spinny, jokey kind of thing. He just can't face the difficult things head on. And I think, you know, again, with marriage and parenting and stuff like that, is there are a lot of heavy things that you have to be able to deal with. And if you can't, because you just like don't have the stamina for it or the, you know, skill set, I mean, that's, you know, that's very challenging. And so, yeah, I think that's, we're seeing that in both like his prior relationship and also in the coaching now. Like, he doesn't, you know, he's just happened to be here kind of guy. Yeah. Like, it's not good enough. And Dr. Sheeran kind of alluded to that last season too. Like, you can't keep tying. That's actually not okay. You know, like, we have to have some sort of, you know, goal here.
Yeah. And I think, like I said, that, you know, I don't think that they're necessarily right, but I think that that's the language they're trying to put it in. It's like, he's not fighting, you know, instead of like, he's actually just sidestepping, like, you know, how many times do all of us deflect, you know, in a therapy session, what we want to talk about with humor? Me, literally 99% of the time. Oh, yeah. So
I had a therapist one time tell me, like, I'm not going to laugh at your jokes anymore. You have to stop.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. So, yeah. So I like the fact that, you know, they immediately, though, go right into him coming back from the airport and he starts having a conversation with Sharon. And then they have, like, you know, she's actually allowing them to ask personal questions. She's allowing some intimacy in with Ted. And then they show her actual personal life of her going into the bedroom with whomever it is that she's sleeping with. And I thought that was a fascinating choice.
So what do you think? So there's all the speculation online. You know, yeah. Are they putting to bed the fans' guess that Ted and Sharon might end up together? Are they making it clear that this is definitely just a professional relationship? Her boundaries are too firm, too solid.
No.
Is she in an actual relationship with someone else? Is she just having sex with somebody else? Is it somebody she paid for sex? Is there like, what, you know? Because she basically indicated that she's now doing her sports psychiatry for a rugby team.
Yeah.
But we know that's not one of her players because there's no way she would break that boundary. You know what I mean?
We don't know.
She's too ethical and too professional and logical. I think there's zero chance.
I want that to be true, but we don't actually know for sure. And I think it's the opposite. I think it's the flip-flop of the fact that she's allowing a conversation with Ted to happen moments before she goes and is intimate with somebody. I think that's actually pointing the opposite, saying that she's actually, in her own rigid way, becoming more and more open to the possibility of intimacy with Ted.
Interesting. So she's got the emotional side of him and then still sex with somebody else because he's still kind of a professional colleague sort of thing.
Yeah. And he's fresh in her mind. Like, it's five feet away. She walks into the bedroom and she's just talking to Ted and she was answering personal questions. He's like, can I still answer? You know, it's like, obviously something she sidestepped, but you know.
Yeah. Interesting. Okay. All right. Well, the other thing is, because they opened the season with her.
Mm-hmm.
That to me says she's going to be an important part of it. So that does also indicate there might be some, you know, coming back to her being a critical role.
But let's not forget too, in that little section there too, the story he was telling is about the janitor, Mr. Maher.
Yeah.
Who is a male authority figure, a male role model or male influencer in his life. And he dies as well.
That's true.
And it's traumatically, he has a gift for him. He goes back the next day to give him the gift. They have this great interplay and then he's not there. And then he makes a joke about him being dead. Cause she says, I didn't see that coming. Cause he said he got hit by a bus. And she said, and he says, neither did I. Neither did he. Yeah. And so it's like, it's the thing of saying, like, I mean, making a joke about the fact that he was killed again, it's like that positive, that toxic positivity and joking away the fact that had to be horribly painful.
Well, and also part of the story is the reason he was stuck at school for hours and hours is because his dad forgot him, right? Yep. Like, there's all kinds of stuff there that, you know, you can needle into. So from the very beginning, one of the first things he says is, why am I still here? Does it make sense that I'm still here? So my theory is that this entire season is set to answer that question. And it doesn't mean London. It means Earth.
Mm-hmm.
I think the whole theme of this season is going to be like suicide and depression. Mm-hmm. And why am I here on the planet?
Yeah. Yeah. Purpose, actual overall purpose.
Right.
Because it doesn't seem, you know, to me that football or soccer means anything to him. It's the relationships that he's forming when he's there.
Right.
And I think part of him finds it a relief to be in London, so he doesn't have to do the heavy lifting of being with his son, talking through the divorce, you know, because then when later on in the episode, when he's on a call, on a Zoom call with him, he says he got a gift from Jake, I think was the guy's name. And he's like, who's Jake? And it says, mommy's friend. And you can see it like kicks him right in the solar plexus, you know, like it just kicks him in the gut. Right. And it, again, it's the thing of where he doesn't have to fight. He doesn't have to, you know, get in and get his hands really dirty with his family.
You know, that makes it really, so do we think that she just met and started dating Jake over the 6 weeks and just introduced him that day to Henry? Because it doesn't seem like it, but that means that Ted and Henry didn't talk about anything.
Yeah, seriously, maybe.
Basically, while he was there, right? Like 6 weeks of, you know, yeah, you'd think that would have come up because this is all the same day. He doubled that conversation with Henry the same day that Henry left, you know, so.
But it could very well, she could have been dating him while she was with Ted and never told her son. And then he just met as well. You know what I mean? She might've kept that big space distance, you know, but yeah, I don't know.
It was a gift. I don't know how deep you have to be into a relationship with a step kid to buy him a Thanos glove. I'm not sure what the rules are there.
Right. It is interesting though, like that they mentioned it first episode. They had to get, they got a lot of content in, a lot of storylines, a lot of, they, like, you know, that this is going to be like a powerhouse season for the fact that they hit you over the head with everything in the first episode.
So part of me, I watched it twice. The first time I was a little like, I kind of came away kind of in a bad mood, a little like, and I think it's because they were messy with my nostalgia.
Yeah.
I think it's because I had this like, oh, this place for the show, you know, and there was some stuff that like was pretty dark and negative and harsh. But of course they need to do that I want that. I want these characters to go through some shit so that I can witness it, because that's the whole point, you know, like we got to learn with them. Right. So they have to fall. They have to, you know, we have to save the cat. So I'm glad for it. But also I had a little bit of like, but the second time through, I felt better. Also, I have to watch this with subtitles. I've realized like I miss like a quarter of the jokes if I'm not reading it as I go.
I miss almost everything Keeley says.
Right. These are the English accents. I'm not even talking about the other, you know, players from across the world. Like,
no,
those are
no.
They
have such specific dialects though. So it's very fascinating. You know, very, very difficult to hear, but I love though, they did bring back lightness of even like, the whole weirdness with the bus driver, Kenneth.
Oh, Venom.
Yeah, that was great. It was so funny. And then even like when the core Diamond Dogs crew is in the coaching office and they don't tell you what they're talking about, but Roy comes in, he's like, so I watched it and I see what you're talking about, but why the fuck did they call it Hoosiers? Like, I thought that was good.
Great, but
like a good, like, you just, if you know, you know, joke. So
it pulls it right in. I also found like the first time I watched it, it takes me a while to like get into the Ted's voice mode, you know, like it's a little bit like hillbilly Shakespeare. You gotta kind of like get the rhythm of it a little bit to be there, you know.
That but to me, like, I can understand Jamie, but I can never understand Keeley, and sometimes I can't understand Rebecca when she kind of goes up in register and she's like animated and she's upset. It's very hard for me to understand. So it's funny, but the going to Rebecca, the conversation, this is my favorite line of the entire movie. Keeley is in her office. Rebecca visits her and she's like, I scheduled crying once a day and I overlapped with you. And then Rebecca's like, oh, crying's great. It's like the orgasm for the soul. That was my favorite line of the whole thing.
Right. That's true.
But then they piggybacked it with darkness, which she said, I don't recall ever crying about Rupert.
Yeah.
Like, again, they married that together with this like profound, like, I don't actually care about this human being, but he needles me to my core, I wish horrible things for him.
He tried to ruin me. I have to ruin him. Yeah. Yeah. There's still some of that. It's bringing up some of her darker forces, you know, like she's very like light and fluffy, but I think she's coming back to some of her, you know, harsher elements. They were, like you said, they're in Keeley's office. Keeley now has his PR firm and Keeley's crying because why?
I mean, one of it is the fact that it's Keeley, but it's like, you know, I don't think they don't even let on for, you know, another 25 minutes into the episode about Roy.
But you kind of, I mean, to me, that was pretty good.
Yeah.
Shadowing, like,
yeah. Yeah. But it's like, again, she's Keely. She is very like, she's very open with her emotions and very, yeah. And so like she will cry or, you know, have some high big emotion at the drop of a hat. So at the beginning I was like, maybe it's just because this is all new and it's scary and she has all the employees and, you know, she has a lot of responsibilities, but then like, it was just like, okay. Yeah. I assumed with the way they ended season two that they did break up, like they would not come back from that.
So Roy going off to vacation without her for six weeks.
He's too, listen, he grew a lot,
but they weren't breaking up, or she insisted they weren't breaking up,
but. Yeah, but they grew a lot, he grew a lot, but his ego is still fragile in that way. Like I don't think he could recover from that. It feels like rejection, so I'm gonna reject you before you really reject me, fuck you. We broke up.
1000% true. That's exactly what I was feeling too. Yep, is that he's not quite to the point where he can have this kind of relationship where he feels safe and trusting and feels, you know, like I think, yeah, still very problematic. And so I was actually thinking about like, I think she may be the most evolved character on the show.
Keely?
I do. Mm-hmm. As far as from like a Taoist perspective, mm-hmm. and stuff, like I think she actually might be. I'm pretty sure the show is really freaking smart, and they're mm-hmm. doing like all the archetypes of, you know, humanity and stuff. Like I'm thinking like Day of Piglet and stuff. Like I think she might have the answers to life. And at some point, she said, "Well, I trust the universe," you know. Like, and mm-hmm. so with Keely's positive, but it's not toxically so. You know, she can address hard stuff. In fact, she lives there. Like she, you know, she's just she's very honest and transparent. And I think that, I think they're making her kind of the model of how to person a little bit.
And I think they're trying to tie in the possibility that they won't break up for the fact that she said, "I trust the universe." And the bus driver told, you know, Roy was all pissed. He's like, "That guy, you know, he told me to like something like give my problems for the earth to hold." They were saying the two sides of the same coin, you know. And so
and he doesn't trust the universe and she does.
And then like his niece saying like, "I think you're being a dumbass," you know, by doing this and stuff. And so like, who knows if they're going to get back together or not, but I do not think he's evolved enough to have a relationship where he can be with somebody who is truly autonomous, because there is part of him that dated the woman who I think they said in the first episode, she said something like, you know, "I don't want to be the woman that shows my tits," you know? And mm-hmm. I think that there was part of that he liked, like it's vapid mm-hmm. in his mind, it's vapid, it's shallow, not mm-hmm. to say people who do that are, but I think that that was part where he just thought like, "Oh yeah, I like her and she seems deeper than that." But also, you know, he has some of that insecurity attached to that side.
Well, and he was facing retirement and losing the spotlight, and mm-hmm. she is a spotlight girl, mm-hmm. you know? So like, he was going to get some side effects from that too, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. So then we have to go into Nate. I mean, Rupert is first off the devil, and the fact that he knows exactly what he's doing to Nate, he knows Nate's daddy issues.
They're making him, I mean, they're vilifying him to like a comical degree.
That's what I mean. He's literally a villain.
Luther in the tower. He is the Dark Lord. He is the, you know, like Vader. I mean, he's all that. Yeah.
I'm waiting for cracks of thunder when he laughs. Yes, exactly. You know?
Thunder, lightning. Song when he enters. Yes. That's totally what I mean. Even the decor of his office, you know, like it's
all dark.
It's so like Devil's Advocate, like the Pacino, you know, like, that kind of vibe. It's pretty funny actually, but yeah. So you're right. He's stroking just the places on Nate that are the most tender to get him to do exactly what he wants forever.
Cause that's what he did to Rebecca too.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's the thing, is they're showing all those parts of his personality that he doesn't connect with people. He manipulates people. And that was why he hired Nate. Nate is brilliant. He is good at what he does, but also he's very, very flawed. Yeah. And he knew what his flaw was. And because they keep toying, even in this first episode, back and forth, where when he gets all like insecure and kind of fumbling and stuff, when he's doing the press conference, there is still the nice guy there. And he's at war with himself of, you know, because he has to do the thing where he like spits on a picture of himself or he spits on the ground. And then he's just like awful to whoever he's talking to. He has no actual real confidence. It's just cruelty.
Yeah. Yeah. Because that's what he thinks is power. You know, that's been his definition of power. At the press conference, I actually thought, in addition to, I thought he was trying to kind of do a play. Like, you know, he started singing lyrics from My Fair Lady. I don't think it was just awkwardness on second watch. I think maybe he was trying to be charming like Ted does. Mm-hmm. Like he sort of was making an effort to, like, we're all in this and we're fun together. And then of course it fails miserably because he's not fun. He's not charming, no. You know, because there's nothing true to it. There's no authentic self there yet, you know?
Yeah,
because I think right, like, there's sweetness there deep down,
yeah,
but you barely see any of it. You know, most like he just can't. He can't release it because again, power, authority. You know, that's all value to him.
Yeah, and his dad is just so awful.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, it goes to show you how destructive a parent like that can be well into somebody's life, like adult life. You know, like he has the power to, you know, to be different and do different things and not all blame his dad for it. You know what I mean? At some point you have to be autonomous and take responsibility for your life, but it's awful to see because he is really deep down a sweet, sweet guy. He's smart. He's good at what he does. And he's actually very sweet, but the,
hurt people hurt people. Right.
Yeah. And I hope that it comes around. I hope that he starts seeing it because again, you can see how, even in this first episode, so it shows you can't win being cruel for the fact that then they go to the press conference with Ted and she's like, I want you to fight. I want you to talk back. I want you to say this thing. And then he's his charming, goofy, bumbly, deflect with humor self. He points it all at him. Yeah. So he points it all at him.
People, we all find that adorably charming and relatable and approachable, accessible, you know, like that is what people... That's so endearing to be the first one to call yourself whatever. And he means it. And it's not snide. It's not nasty. Mm. It's just, you know, like it's, he won by niceness. Like kindness always wins, kind of the theory here, you know?
Yeah. When someone does it in a situation like that, we look at it as virtuous.
Yes.
You know, He deflected everything off of Rebecca and empower, and then again, he empowered himself. He empowered the team again. He empowered Rebecca because it's like, these are the people you want to root for, not the devil on a pedestal who is saying really, really crappy things about everybody. And, and again, it shows too, that the true power is in kindness.
Right. Well, and we know that ego, I mean, it's so perilous. Like arrogance like that is perilous. It doesn't seem like security. It doesn't give you confidence that your team's going to be amazing, but an ability to look at yourself with a sense of humor, with honesty, with grace, that does give you staying power. That does make you this, you know, powerhouse potential. I mean, you know, I think that's what they're showing basically is like, it's all about the processing of the person inside each individual person on the team. Like that's what strength is, really, is vulnerability. I think it's all, I really think this is just a big love letter to Brené Brown, the whole series.
I agree. And it is the thing too, of just showing that this is who Nate is, as far as like whether the team does good or bad. In his mind, wrongly, it's like, then this puts value on myself or it devalues me. For Ted, it doesn't. Ted's like, oh, and I think really it does for Ted, but I think that's Ted just does you know, I don't really care. Right. What am I even doing here? And if I play it safe, if I act like I'm always like this bumbling, you know, I don't care person, then everyone's going to think it doesn't matter to me and it's not going to be a big deal. But again, it is. But that again comes across to Rebecca as you're not fighting.
Right. Right. When really he just can't show his heartbreak, you know, or his fear.
Yeah. Yeah. And well, I think he's
a little kid who had to be in the face of a grieving parent when you had to be really tough and strong. Like that changes kind of your makeup, you know what I mean? Like it makes it very hard to face things again authentically, you know?
Yeah, and it is, yeah, it is that, and it is so much that they're going to, I think, reveal throughout the season of, you know, it has to feel hard for his ex-wife and for people that are close to him, especially women. Mm-hmm. That he does not seem to ever fight for anything, you know, that he deflects with jokes, with humor, and he always just like, I'm the nice guy and I'll bow out, instead of like, I can still be a nice guy and I also can fight for you and I also can show you how I feel, and it can feel safe to me to put myself out there. And so, you know, I'm really intrigued, and I hope that they do start helping him come into his own as a person throughout the season.
Yes, I totally agree. One of the lines that really struck me was he said, maybe my being here is causing more hurt than help now. Mm. And of course, he's referencing the team, but he's not.
Yeah.
you know? Yeah. I mean, I think there's like, there's so, I mean, we know this, there's so much depth there that needs to be kind of still gotten through. And he's going back to parenting, going back to work, and he hasn't really done the, you know, the therapy work that he needs to do to get to a point of healing, right? Like, he's still very early in that process, it seems like, you know?
It is proving the adage that you can be the nicest person in the world, but if you stay in the middle of the road, you hurt both sides. I mean, that's just it. You have to have some sort of deference, you know, one way or the other. You have to fight one way or the other. You have to let go or fight. You can't just walk the middle of the road, because you'll be letting down people on both sides. And I think that is really playing out.
Yeah. I love that he does not see Nate as the villain or the nemesis at all. You know what I mean? He sees what's like coming out of Nate, what's been done to Nate, you know, like, I think he sees, like, he just sees so much goodness in other people. I think we're going to need to see him learn that about himself as well, you know?
Sorry. No, please go ahead.
I was going to ask you, is there anything else major that you wanted to cover? I know we're probably at about 20 minutes.
No, I think that's good. I mean, sums it up quite nicely. We did touch on basically everything that was on there, and so
the hilarity here, you know, they go down to the sewer system, like, it's just it's great. There's great set pieces. It's very funny. It's very sweet. The music is fantastic. It ends with a Beyonce song. Like, it's so good. I have one bananas prediction for the season. Mm-hmm. Do you have any that you are brewing up that you think is just wildly?
We'll see. Tell me what you have.
Okay. The last episode of the season, we're going to learn this has all been like some sort of fever dream, or like like in that, you know, in the locker room and the dance scene that we all see the footage of over and over again, he hit his head. So he's actually been in a coma, something like that.
Wow.
And he wakes up in Kansas, because this is all like Wizard of Ozzy, like a la Dorothy. He's been in Kansas this whole time. And he's been, that's my theory.
So he's still married. He still his life is the way that it was, and he's in Kansas.
I don't know. We'll see. Yeah, I don't know. So this is something like all of this was, and the only real person in all of this is Beard, maybe, or something. There's something there. I think it could get real weird, and it will be satisfying no matter how they do it, I think. But
so you think all three seasons are really just the one episode of Beard?
Well, so, I mean, I think they're in Kansas though, so I don't know. Yeah,
that's what I mean. Like, it's just the whole Beard episode was just like this, you know, like basically everyone's microdosing apparently, so it's like it's really surreal and doesn't make any sense.
Went to London on vacation, came back to his friend in a coma, and was talking about London, so that makes it into the coma. I don't know. I'm just saying, if it's so wild that if I'll be the only one that said it.
I have a prediction that, you know, I don't know. It's like I have a one of two ways. I really feel strongly that he's going to end up with Sharon, which doesn't make a ton of sense, but other than the fact that they're both super awkward and weird.
Oh, I hope
and
you're
I
right.
Love them both, you know, like, but my other prediction is
they both have to work. Well, real quick, they both have to learn vulnerability.
100%.
She's pretty, like, right. And they both have substance abuse issues.
True.
Like, I think we're also going to tackle some alcoholism and stuff.
Yeah,
like,
true.
So they have some stuff like similarly to each other. So yeah, there could be so cool growth for both of them. Anyway, go on.
I think that they're going to lean more into him getting help with Sharon. They're going to be friends, and he gets back together with his ex-wife.
Oh, interesting.
And you kind of get tight. They tidy that up with a happy ending, but some other things are not so happy ending. But like, it's hard to predict how they're going to end your relationship with a beloved, charming character. This is, nobody's going to be happy. You're like, I'm going to be satisfied anyway. And I'm like, if it's a fever dream from Kansas, I'm burning this whole town down. Like, it's not satisfying to me at all.
I think either way, whether he's been in Kansas the whole time, he will go back to America. Like, I think that's how season three has to end, is that we couldn't watch more because it's not happening anymore. He's done. You know what I mean?
Like, I agree with that. But I leave it with, I will burn everything down. I will burn the world down if it's just a fever dream.
Oh, it's all a dream.
I'm like, what? I think we're going to end it there.
Yep.
with rioting and pillaging, depending on how it ends.
Well, we have, probably 10 episodes usually? I don't know how many episodes.
I think I looked it up, and I think there's 12 this season. So we have 11 more. Yeah, it's 12.
Okay, so we have like 12 weeks to decide if we need to burn the whole thing down or not.
Oh, my God. It's going to stress me out is what it's going to do. Because I want, I like, it's like... when you get really engrossed in a book and then you miss the characters when it's done.
Yes, yes.
I've so much vested into these people yeah. as if they're real.
Right.
Because no, the way my brain works yeah. that I will be mad if somebody does them dirty.
I really trust these writers. Like they've over yeah. and over again proven that they've earned our trust, and they knew from the start, the moment they started writing these characters, what was going to happen with these characters. So I trust that it's all going to make sense in the end. Yeah. I don't always feel that. I often don't feel that way about writers in a show, but this one I do, which is another reason they should hire me to help write the movie. Cause I'm going to be so nice in the writer's room and I'll bring muffins and stuff.
I don't know. You mean they'll be mad because you bring vegan muffins.
That's true. Don't tell them. They'll never have to know.
And then they will flip you know, it again. Then they will burn everything down. All right. With that, I'm going to end it here.
All right.
Was really good chatting you up. We will be talking to you the day after every single Ted Lasso episode, whenever possible. Like if somebody yeah. is, you know, has to have an iron lung or something, we won't do it. But
then
otherwise,
you get 48 hours to recover and then right. you better come back.
You get 48 hours for that iron lung.
You
from
your you
from your hyperbaric chamber. I want you to do this podcast.
Yeah, no, this is awesome. All right, this has been Believing in Biscuits with Sonia and Sarah. Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to What Won't She Say. You can find us at whatwontshesay.com, on Spotify, iTunes, or anywhere else that you like to find your podcasts.